to give a cheer and show they're not afraid. I'd like to ask him what he's trying to defend. I'd like to ask him what he thinks he's gonna win. Is there anybody here who thinks that following the orders takes away the blame? Is there anybody here who wouldn't mind a murder by another name?
Robin Bush and his merry band ripped apart this happy land. It's Robin Hood with a switch. He steals from the poor and gives to the rich. The Bushies and the Foxies and the prehistoric Limbaugh. We had a huge surplus and it's gone. We'll be running huge.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Construction was to begin yesterday at Boston's Fleet Center in preparation for the Democratic National Convention coming to town next month. But picketing policemen have stymied the work. When construction workers showed up to the sports arena to begin the multi-million-dollar job of turning it into a convention hall, the vast majority refused to cross the lines. The city's police, firefighters, and EMTs are just some of the 40% of the city's union workforce that's currently working without a contract. Talks between the city and police broke off Monday.
Tuesday was a big day for New York City's municipal unions. Blocking traffic and stretching several blocks down Broadway, 75,000 people rallied in support of the police, firefighters, and teachers' unions. Josephine Martinez Darrow, who worked in the New York City School District for over 30 years, spoke in front of City Hall.
I can sincerely tell you this has been the worst year as far as doing my job. I work as a full-time mentor, and hopefully we will be able to get a contract so things will be uplifted again, and we will no longer have to go through the disrespect that we've been going through for many years already.
Participants said they want union contracts that include living wage pay increases, but Mayor Bloomberg says New York City can afford more than a 3% raise. Members of the United Federation of Teachers have been without a contract since last year. Unionists in the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association and the Uniformed Firefighters Association have been working without a contract for almost 2 years.
Workers at the Grupo M Levi's jeans factory in Haiti's Free Trade Zone went on strike Monday to protest harsh union-busting efforts, which are supposedly prohibited by the factory's major investor, the World Bank. Various campaigns of intimidation and abuse have been unleashed upon the workers there by management, who refuse to recognize a union which has majority support. In the last 2 weeks, workers report being strip-searched and beaten by members of the armed forces of the neighboring Dominican Republic. Some 36 workers have also been fired for union activity.
Here's today's Dow Report. According to new data released by the Census Bureau, school districts' debt rose by 12%, reaching $226 billion in the 2001-2002 school year. Major causes of debt include new school construction, a worsening U.S. economy, and stricter education lines. The data doesn't include...
For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
It's always enlightening to have the glories of corporate globalization explained to us by conservative pontificators who try to convince us that globalization is the height of morality, for it indirectly aids the poor, a group of people they never care to aid directly. Not long ago, we were treated to an example of such enlightenment by William Safire, the old Nixon speechwriter who's now a pundit for the New York Times. He offered a touching hypothetical story of a low-income mother whose 12-year-old boy had said to her, "Mama, I need new shoes because the old ones with the holes hurt my feet and the other kids in school are laughing at me." But, Sapphire tells us sadly, his fictional mama had to say to her boy that she couldn't afford no $50 on new shoes made in America. Glory be and hallelujah, though, Sapphire's morality tale ends happily, for Mama found a store that was, quote, having a clearance of shoes made in China or Indo someplace. I bought him a pair of fine leather shoes for $24. You should have seen my boy's face light up. In case you missed the moral of this literary gem, Sapphire pounds it into us in the next sentence of his column. Free trade is helping that lady make ends meet because her hard-earned dollar now has more buying power. If those fast-talking protectionists had their way, the high cost of living would deny her boy those shoes. Gosh, Bill, thanks for that little lecture. Meanwhile, moving from fiction to real life, you might observe that Nike does not lower the price on its shoes just because it pays workers in Indo someplace a dollar a day instead of the $10 an hour it used to pay U.S. workers. No, Nike simply pockets the savings. Also, if Mama had not had her middle-class job offshored by the likes of Nike, she would not be poor, and then she could afford $50 on new shoes made in America. This is Jim Hightower saying, instead of pushing more trickle-down fantasies, let's invest in America's middle class again.
Hello from Athens, Greece, folks. Now, if you're a big sports fan like me, this is the place to be. They've got them all. Take fencing. My sword of choice is always the foil over the saber and épée. You've got to see it. That's why Connell Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels have created the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. You could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To enter, visit choicehotels.com, or every time you stay at a Connell Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels this summer, you'll get a game piece with a chance to win hundreds of prizes. Wake up a winner. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Well, I'm off to rhythmic gymnastics, where it always comes down to who nails the tightest ribbons. See you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit Choice Hotel.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, love American way. Tom Hartman broadcasting here live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, from the Sirius satellite, deep from the depths of outer space, beaming around the world on radiopower.org, literally around the world, 97 countries, I think, daily listen. Maybe it was 98, I don't even remember. Anyway, welcome to our program. We have talked in the past about the difference between conservative and liberal philosophy, as it were, that as Leon Baradat points out in his book, The Origins and Impact of Political Ideologies, your basic textbook on the topic, liberalism holds five primary values: human rights, rationalism, equalitarianism, personal liberty, and internationalism. And conservatism holds five primary values, which are the polar opposites in many regards: property rights rather than human rights, irrationalism, generally associated with religious belief as opposed to rationalism, elitism as opposed to equalitarianism, that is, a ruling elite, authoritarianism as opposed to personal liberty, and nationalism as opposed to internationalism. The property part of it, for example, John Locke used the phrase life, liberty, and property. And Jefferson made a real significant shift in that. He made it liberal, as it were, by changing it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Conservatives really would like to go back to the right of property. In fact, it's a very significant, argument that goes on. Probably one of the great thinkers of conservative thought was Edmund Burke back in the 18th century. He said, the occupation of a hairdresser or a working tallow chandler, that's a candle maker, cannot be a matter of honor to any person, to say nothing of a number of more servile employments. Such description of men ought not to suffer oppression from the state, but the state suffers oppression if such as they, either individually or collectively, are permitted to rule. God forbid they, a candle maker, vote. So anyhow, we have this this polarity, as it were, in the United States. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the folks from the Ayn Rand Institute and the objectivists, and to some extent the libertarians, although I think a lot of the libertarians have gone off the rail. They haven't really held true to the teachings of Ayn Rand. But, you know, in her book Atlas Shrugged, for example, she makes it very clear. Of course, you know, this is a woman whose father lost his business to the Bolsheviks in the Bolshevik Revolution and who studied economics, history, and politics in the USSR, in Kiev, and then came to the United States and started the Objectivist movement. And of course, Alan Greenspan is one of her disciples. And as she makes clear in her book, and in that book, many others, you read it, and it's a story about this noble capitalist, one in particular, and several others as well, and the stupid, idiotic government bureaucrats who are always screwing things up and are corrupt and are working to the ill of everybody, and you know, isn't it a terrible thing? And kind of lays it out, just lays it out. And the thing that I really appreciate about the folks at Ayn Rand is that, you know, they're honest. They don't play the games that so many of the cons these days play of trying to speak to the middle and then act to the right. And so I'm pleased to have on the program today Alex Epstein. Alex, is it Epstein or Epstein?
It's Epstein, but it's not really a big deal.
Okay, well, I'd like to get it right, and thank you. Alex Epstein is an objectivist speaker, and writer living in Richmond, Virginia. He's got a bachelor's degree at Duke University. He's written for a large number of publications, the Washington Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Miami Herald, and so forth. And Alex has written a piece titled World Opinion Be Damned, America's Attempts to Appease World Opinion Are Depraved and Suicidal. You suggest that we, the United States, are being criticized around the world for the abuses at Abu Ghraib prison, and you know, now this memo that just leaked to the John Ashcroft, who was before Congress yesterday, everybody was freaking out about, in which the president was told that yes, he could torture people, including up to and including killing them, without having to worry about legal penalties for that. You point out, yet there are no worldwide condemnations of the dictators that practice such atrocities. And you want to rant about that a little bit, Alex?
Sure. Well, it's not even the point I was making about leaving aside the Ashcroft thing. I can tell you my view on torture in a minute, which is different from most people, since I think it's perfectly legitimate in certain contexts to practice. But in terms of the outrage over Abu Ghraib, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, it was completely disproportionate and illegitimate. I mean, even assuming that it was improper to torture these people, this was comparatively mild humiliation. It was, you know, a couple of incidents in comparison to torture being daily practice throughout the Middle East. I mean, I just heard last week, and I'm sure this happened dozens of times throughout the Middle East last week, just a mother in Jordan who was not married, and so people just murdered her. I mean, they have honor killings all over the place for engaging in premarital sex.
Yeah.
They pull out your fingernails for being un-Islamic. I mean, we could spend the whole program just detailing the atrocities of these places.
Yeah, not just in Islam. I mean, the Hindus do this to some extent, not as broadly, but there are similar practices in the Hindu world, particularly the killing of women who have been dishonored. You find it in parts of the world that don't subscribe to the major religions. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that. However, I'm assuming you realize that now 35 people have been killed in American prisons in Abu Ghraib and in Afghanistan, and that at least one, I mean, Lindy England now is asserting that she witnessed the murder of a person during torture, and that's the photograph of that corpse, and that they took him out with a phony IV in him so it wouldn't look like he had been murdered. I assume you know that.
Okay, well, in terms of what I, quote, know or don't, I mean, there are many allegations.
I mean, the United States government
died.
There are 35 investigations right now for homicide.
Right, well, but that is an investigation. That is not a conviction.
Well,
in any case, you could say that anyway. You could say there have been 35 murders, and it wouldn't change the fact that the world is claiming false moral outrage about this, and yet is completely indifferent to killing as a way of life throughout the Middle East.
Okay, I absolutely agree with you, Alex, on that. Here's where we part company. I don't hear Jordan. You know, I don't hear the King of Jordan. I don't hear Mubarak of Egypt. I don't hear Assad of Syria. Any of these guys who you and I agree will, like, you know, drill people's teeth with an electric drill to extract confessions from them, you know, break their fingers. I mean, you know, do really and far more horrific things than those. You know, Saddam used to throw people out of helicopters for fun. I don't hear any of those people holding themselves up to the world and saying, we have developed a form of government, of governance and of government, that is so good that you should emulate it. And yet the United States has been doing that since 1776. And in 1776, there were zero democracies in the world. Now there are 81 full democracies in the world, because 81 nations so far, and another 100 that are well on their way, 81 nations plus 100 that are on their way, have taken hook, line, and sinker this belief that we hold a moral standard that's worthy of emulation. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is, to hell with that. It doesn't matter. If we got to torture them, torture them.
Well, no, I'm not saying that at all. The question is, what is the moral standard? When you say that people emulate the United States and you speak of, quote, democracy, that is a very vague term. What the United States uniquely established was respect for individual rights. That's the principle of the Declaration of Independence.
That's one of many. I know it's the favorite one of the objectivists, but it's one of many.
Okay, well,
it's an important one. We'll agree on that.
A minute, if you'd like. But
sure.
In terms of my interpretation, the fundamental is individualism and individual rights, and that is what makes America great. That is what has led to what I know you oppose, which is the rise of business and the Industrial Revolution and corporations and the massive wealth creation of this country. That's what leads to our well-deserved power. That's what leads to individuals in this country having the best shot of happiness at anywhere on earth. And part of a country that respects individual rights and that protects them is that it does whatever is necessary to protect them from foreign aggressors.
No, that was the rationale that Hitler used.
That what? Hitler
absolutely used that rationale. Come on, Alex, I lived in Germany for a year. I've read, you know, both Mein Kampf and Schurer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I know 80-year-old Nazis who still think that Hitler was a good guy. That was the rationale Hitler used. Number one, in Austria, we need Lebensraum, and then beyond that, Poland is going to attack us any day now. We've got to take them out.
Excuse me, we got attacked on September 11th.
Not by Iraq!
That is actually arguable.
No, it's not arguable. It is an absolute statement of fact. Iraq did not attack us on 9/11. If you know, Saudi Arabia attacked us on 9/11. I mean, you know, if you want to argue that we should be over to Saudi Arabia torturing people, we could have a discussion about that. But you know, I don't recall any Iraqis on that airplane. Do you?
That leaves open the question of whether Saddam Hussein had any role in initiating it. But whether he did or not.
Alex, hang on a second. Here's what George Bush...
We have no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No. That's George Bush.
Yes, George Bush thinks a lot of things that are wrong. And I do not... Look, the point I want to make, I'm just saying that I do not... That this idea that Saddam Hussein...
Okay, well, let's say he was involved.
...by torturing him can save the lives of Americans, then it is immoral not to torture him. And if you can... I don't approve the Geneva Convention. I don't approve any of these so-called rules of war. They just work to the advantage of aggressors. Saddam doesn't follow rules of war, or didn't. I mean,
and so we should become just like him.
No, we shouldn't become just like him. We should defend ourselves, but not hamstring ourselves.
So we should defend ourselves with his techniques.
It's not his techniques. We're not gassing random United States citizens.
Okay. We're talking to Alex Epstein. He's an objectivist and speaker in Richmond, Virginia. www.ayinrand.org is the website there. Alex, stick around. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
Ah, ah. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and community.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
One 866-889-8894, our telephone number. We're talking with Alex Epstein, an objectivist speaker and writer from Richmond, Virginia, with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org is their website. And Alex, I know you can only be with us for another 4 or 5 minutes here. Let me just bring up one other point here. In your article, which was published on the Institute's media link, World Opinion Be Damned, America's Attempts to Appease World Opinion Are Depraved and Suicidal, you suggest that the proper response is to kill and demoralize them while proudly arguing for the superiority of Americanism. Such a policy would make us safe. Two questions. First of all, killing and demoralizing them while proudly arguing for the superiority of Americanism sounds to me like an oxymoron. I mean, isn't that what King George III tried to do to us? And do you really think this is going to make us safe?
Yeah, well, you left out a couple of portions of that quote. What I said was that we are dealing here, the so-called world opinion is the opinion of the world's worst people, which includes our militant enemies, like the Islamists and the regimes that sponsor them and sponsor terrorism, and then just the more ideological enemies, like the collectivists and the pacifists who want to subordinate us to the UN. And so my point was, in the case of the militant enemies, you have to defeat them militarily and end any hope of their cause. And as for the ideological ones, and of course the Islamists are also ideological enemies, you have to morally discredit them. It has to be like communism, communists used to have terrorists all around the world. They used to have fellow travelers everywhere, and that Soviet Union fell, and that whole movement was discredited, which is why, with the exception of North Korea, which we could easily deal with, and possibly China, the communists are no longer a threat, and they're certainly no longer the threat that they once were. And so what I'm saying is, we have to do the same thing with the Islamists. They have to be absolutely annihilated, and their whole goal of Islamic world domination has to be totally discredited so that everyone knows if they try to give their life for it, that's going to be in vain.
Well, it sounds to me, Alex, like what you're saying contradicts itself. Let's use communism for an example. We fought communism in Vietnam, and what did they do? They fought back. I mean, you know,
I disapprove of that war.
Well, let me just finish my point. I mean, I understand that, but you know, I'm not here to try and rehash the Vietnam War. But the point is, you know, we fought communism there, and they fought back because it was we were trying to fight against an idea, and of course there was nationalism. With China, rather than fighting communism, we've been doing business with them, and it seems that they're slowly changing. I mean, do you really think that killing people is the best way to change their mind when you're trying to fight an idea like radical Islam?
I said you kill the militant enemies. You cannot have an intellectual discussion with somebody who's fundamentally, philosophically opposed to everything the United States stands for. You can't have an intellectual discussion with Osama bin Laden. You can and should have an intellectual discussion, but one in which you morally stand up for your own position with anybody else in the world to the extent that they're open. And you should intellectually condemn ideas like pacifism, which says the United States should avoid military action despite the fact that these movements and nations are waging war against us. You should fight against socialism. You should fight against all Islamic anti-Americanism. You should fight.
But don't you think, Alex, that Islam would take care of Osama bin Laden all by themselves if they saw him as toxic? If we could help them see him as toxic, rather than taking actions like we did in Iraq that now causes them to think of us as toxic?
You know, our CIA and State Department for decades have been trying to hold this belief that Islam is somehow benign, and that if we can somehow be the arbiters of Islamic doctrine. I mean, we have no such authority whatsoever. The only thing that we can do is tell Muslims, if you go in this militant direction, if you think that you're going to take over the world with theocracy, you are absolutely wrong. That is a completely immoral idea, and anybody who takes a step in the direction of it is going to be defeated. That is the only thing that will encourage the better elements of the Muslims to say, we reject this whole idea of theocracy, we reject Osama bin Laden's mission, and we are scared as hell of being seen as having to do anything with it.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Alex Epstein from the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Alex, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Okay, have a good one with you. We'll be right back.
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Construction was to begin yesterday at Boston's Fleet Center in preparation for the Democratic National Convention coming to town next month. But picketing policemen when construction workers showed up to the sports arena to begin the multi-million-dollar job of turning it into a convention hall, the vast majority refused to cross the lines. The city's police, firefighters, and EMTs are just some of the 40% of the city's union workforce that's currently working without a contract today.
Josephine Martin wage pay increases, but Mayor Bloomberg says New York City can't afford more than a 3% raise. Members of the United Federation of Teachers have been without a contract since last year. Unionists in the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association and the Uniformed Firefighters Association have been working without a contract for almost 2 years.
Workers at the Grupo M Levi's Jeans factory in Haiti's Free Trade Zone went on strike Monday to protest harsh union-busting efforts, which are supposedly prohibited by the factory's major investor, the World Bank. Various campaigns of intimidation and abuse have been unleashed upon the workers there by management, who refuse to recognize a union which has majority support. In the last 2 weeks, workers report being strip-searched and beaten by members of the armed forces of the neighboring Dominican Republic. Some 36 workers have also been fired for union activity.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to new data released by the Census Bureau, school districts' debt rose by 12%, reaching $226 billion in the 2001-2002 school year. Major causes of debt include new school construction, a worsening U.S. economy, and stricter education guidelines. The data doesn't include Bush's No Child Left Behind program, which without increased federal funding is expected to sink districts even deeper into debt.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Croft. And said, hey, can I authorize torture up to and including murder of prisoners if it's going to lead to information that may save the lives of Americans or stop another attack on America? I mean, this is a very serious question. And now the paper has been leaked, of course, to the media. Two different opinions where the lawyers said, yes, you can do that. And they, I mean, these are tortured legal arguments. And they would not stand up against the Geneva Convention. They would not stand up in The Hague. Of course, we have recused ourselves from the International Criminal Court Tribunal, the permanent International Criminal Court in The Hague. So we don't have to. I guess Bush doesn't have to worry about that. But you know, this question, and you've got some voices who are saying, you know, this is really a big mistake. For example, Teddy Kennedy. Waving around in Congress yesterday, waving around pictures of, you know, the Abu Ghraib, you know, the prisoners, and saying,
this is what directly results when you have that kind of memoranda out there. And it says that it's all because of executive authority and executive power.
Now, he was, you know, ranting on at Ashcroft. In other words, you have a memoranda that says that you can torture people. You start torturing people, and this is what happens. And then the world sees, and then you lose your moral authority, and then where are you? And that really, I think, is one of the critical questions of our time. Joe Biden made the point really well. This is a clip that got, you know, a lot of coverage on the news. You may well have seen it, but it's worthy of repeating. Here's Joe Biden speaking to John Ashcroft yesterday.
There's a reason why we signed these treaties. To protect my son in the military. That's why we have these treaties. So when Americans are captured, they are not tortured.
Now, of course, those on the right would say, well, what about Nick Berg? He got his head cut off. These guys aren't respecting any treaties. But I agree. And they're criminals, and they should be brought to justice, and you know, very straightforward process there. The question then becomes, should we as a nation torture people who might be able to provide us information as to who they are? And that gets us back to the question of, do we become them to stop them? And I think no. I think that is not the history of the United States, and in fact, I want to share some things with you that will give you that. But just to wrap up this Ashcroft thing, first of all, Pat Leahy yesterday asked Ashcroft the following question. Excuse me, pushed the wrong button. Here we go.
Did your department issue a memorandum
that would suggest that torture is allowed under certain circumstances, as the press has reported.
Now, the response to that that Ashcroft gave him was a non-response. He basically refused to respond. So Dick Durbin, congressman from Illinois, I believe, I'm quite sure he's a Democrat. These are both Democrats, picked it up from there. And Ashcroft basically cited an old Supreme Court ruling that had suggested, it was a dissent, it was the writings of one of the justices, that had suggested that in times of war the president could take extraordinary measures. I would have to go back and look exactly which one it was. I believe it was the ruling that allowed Roosevelt to intern Japanese Americans, but I could be wrong. But in any case, he cited something like that. And Dick Durbin responded to him.
But today, Mr. Attorney General, you quote former Justice Murphy and tell us a nation at war is bound by different rules, rules that limit disclosure, rules that expand the powers of the government, and rules that change time-honored standards. Notwithstanding the wisdom of Mr. Murphy, Justice Murphy, I think the Supreme Court and Ex parte Milligan should be our guide.
Now, what is Ex parte Milligan? And why is Dick Durbin bringing this up? Ex parte Milligan, by the way, is probably one. Ex parte means it's a piece of. This is the United States Supreme Court decision, number 71, U.S. 2, 1966. It was the December term, 1866 of the United States Supreme Court. Mr. Justice Davis delivered the opinion of the court. And it was the case of a guy by the name of Lambton P. Milligan. Lambton P. Milligan lived in Indiana, which was not one of the states that was part of the Confederacy. And on October 5th, 1864, he was sitting at home, and Union soldiers busted in, arrested him for being a Confederate sympathizer, and took him before a military commission. Well, let me read from the Supreme Court. This is the actual words of Justice Davis, 1866. On the 21st day of October, 1864, he was brought before a military conviction commission convened in Indianapolis by order of General Hovey, tried on certain charges and specifications, found guilty, and sentenced to be hanged, and the sentence ordered to be executed on Friday, the 19th day of May, 1865. Now, Milligan argued, wait a minute, I wasn't part of the Confederate Army, and I'm a member of, I'm a citizen of the United. Well, here's again from the Supreme Court ruling, reading from Justice Davis. Milligan insists that said military commission had no jurisdiction to try him upon the charges preferred. While I'm reading this, by the way, military commission, keep in mind all those guys down there in Guantanamo, Jose Padilla. They're all facing military commission. George Bush has asserted that we don't need no civil courts. It's a military commission. Anyway, Milligan insists that said military commission had no jurisdiction to try him upon the charges preferred or upon any charges whatsoever because he was a citizen of the United States in the state of Indiana and had not been, since the commencement of the late rebellion, a resident of any of the states whose citizens were arrayed against the government. In other words, he wasn't a Confederate. He didn't live in a Confederate state. He wasn't a Confederate soldier. Now, Justice Davis goes on to say, the importance of the main question presented by this record cannot be overstated, for it involves the very framework of the government and fundamental principles of American liberty. No graver question was ever considered by this court, nor one which more nearly concerns the rights of the whole people. By the protection of the law, human rights are secured. Withdraw that protection, and we are at the mercy of wicked rulers. I'm reading from Justice of the United States Davis, who delivered the majority decision in Ex parte Milligan, 71 U.S. 2, 1866. He went on to refer back to the founders. He said, time has proven the discernment of our ancestors. These great and good men foresaw that troublesome times would arise when rulers and people would become restive under restraint. But the Constitution of the United States is a law for rulers and people, equally in war and in peace. and covers with the shield of its protection all classes of men at all times and under all circumstances. No doctrine involving more pernicious consequences, this being the doctrine that during time of war you can set aside the Constitution, no doctrine involving more pernicious consequences was ever invented by the wit of man than that any of its provisions can be suspended, its being the Constitution, can be suspended during any of the great exigencies, you know, problems, disasters, of government. Such a doctrine leads directly to either anarchy or despotism, and the theory of necessity upon which it is based is false. Are you starting to get a theme here? And then he looked forward. You know, I mean, this was 1866, right? He's looking forward. He says, if this position is sound, that when war exists, the commander can, if he chooses, substitute military force for and to the exclusion of the laws and punish all persons as he thinks right and proper without fixed and certain rules. If the statement of this proposition shows its importance, for if true, republican government is a failure, and there is an end of liberty regulated by law. This concept effectually, I'm reading from the Supreme Court decision, 1866, this effectually renders the military independent of the superior of the soul, and the attempt to do which by the King of Britain was deemed by our fathers such an offense that they assigned it to the world as one of the causes which impelled them to declare their independence. Civil liberty and this kind of martial law cannot endure together. The antagonism is irreconcilable, and in the conflict, one or the other must perish. And then he talks about future presidents. This nation, Justice Davis wrote, as experience has proved, cannot always remain at peace, and has no right to expect that it will always have wise and humane rulers sincerely attached to the principles of the Constitution. Wicked men, ambitious of power, with hatred of liberty and contempt of law, may fill the place once occupied by Washington and Lincoln. And if this right, that is the right of the president to set aside the Constitution during time of war, if this right is conceded and the calamities of war again befall us, the dangers to human liberty are frightful to contemplate. Our fathers knew, the history of the world told them, that the nation they were founding, be its existence short or long, would be involved in war at some point in time, and that unlimited power, wherever lodged at such a time, was especially hazardous to free men. For this and other equally weighty reasons, they secured the inheritance, that being the Constitution, they had fought to maintain by incorporating in a written Constitution the safeguards which time had proved were essential to its preservation. Not one of these safeguards can the President or Congress or the judiciary disturb. United States Supreme Court, Ex parte Milligan, 71 U.S. to 1866, December term 1866. So now, let me just once again play for you that little clip with you, John Ashcroft's thoughts on this.
But today, Mr. Attorney General, you quote former Justice Murphy and tell us a nation at war is bound by different rules, rules that limit disclosure, rules that expand the powers of the government, and rules that change time-honored standards. Notwithstanding the wisdom of Mr. Murphy, Justice Murphy, I think the Supreme Court and Ex parte Milligan should be our guide.
That being what I just read to you in its substance.
Mr. Attorney General, you've said you won't disclose these memos, and I'll get to that point in a moment. But I can tell you, frankly, contents of the memos have already been disclosed for the world to see. And the contents of the memos call into question your statement that it's not your job or the job of this administration to define torture. Here is a memo by your Assistant Attorney General Jay Bybee, quoted in this morning's paper, which defines torture as, quote, must be equivalent in intensity to the pain accompanying serious physical injury, such as organ failure, impairment of bodily function, or even death. Another memo, which you will not disclose, but has been leaked and is quoted this morning, talks about seven techniques that the courts have considered torture. And the memo goes on to say, while we cannot say with certainty that the acts falling short of these seven would not constitute torture, we believe that interrogation techniques would have to be similar to these in their extreme nature and in the type of harm caused to violate law. Mr. Attorney General, if that isn't a definition of torture, coming straight out of your department, by the people who answer to you, what is it?
Yeah, what is it? An excellent question. It continues.
You have said that you're not claiming executive privilege. That's for the president to claim.
Let me just pause this right here. At that point, by the way, Ashcroft gave him a mealy-mouthed answer which had nothing to do with what he was saying. You know, he went on to this, well, I respect the Constitution and all this kind of... So Durbin comes back to it.
You have said that you're not claiming executive privilege. That's for the president to claim. But the law is very clear. You have two options when you say no to this committee. Either the executive claims privilege and refuses to disclose, or you cite a statutory provision whereby Congress has limited its constitutional right to information. So which is it, Mr. Attorney General?
Which
is
it?
Executive privilege, or which statute are you claiming is going to shield you from making this disclosure of these memos at this point?
Okay, Ashcroft, is it executive privilege, or do you have a law, or are you just lying to us and going to go to
jail? I am refusing to disclose these memos because I believe it is essential to the operation of the executive
he believes
branch
it. Yeah.
That the president have the opportunity to get information from his attorney general that is confidential, and that the...
Our employees...
responsibility to do that is a function of the executive branch and a necessity that is protected by the doctrine of the separation of powers in the Constitution.
Mr. General,
for that reason, and that is the reason for which I have not delivered to the Congress or the members of the Senate these memos.
Mr. Attorney General, with all due respect, your personal belief is not a law, and you are not citing a law. And you are not claiming executive privilege. And frankly, that is what contempt of Congress is all about. You have to give us a specific legal authority which gives you the right to say no. Or the president has to claim privilege, and you've done neither.
And they've done neither, and he's in contempt of Congress. And if it wasn't for the Republicans controlling the majority, this guy, John Ashcroft, would be in jail right now. Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Creatures in the deep ocean adapt to life in a dark and dangerous world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The middle zone of the deep ocean is a very dark place. Little sunlight penetrates to depths of 600 feet or more, and we would find it impossible to see anything down there. On the other hand, deep sea creatures are well suited for survival in this cold, dark world. Tracy Sutton is a marine scientist at the Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institution. He studies animals that live between 600 and 1,000 feet deep, and he says a lot of them can see in the dark.
The eyes of the animals down there, they're modified so that they can see any little available light. So they don't form a real good image, but their eyes are super, super sensitive. Their eyes are more sensitive than any instruments we have to measure light.
Sutton says good eyesight helps predators find their prey. Those other creatures have to take care not to be seen. Sutton says that's not easy because there's nothing to hide behind.
Most of these animals spend their entire lives without seeing a solid object. They don't see the bottom. They don't see the surface. They just float in this midwater zone where there's just nowhere to hide at all.
Since there's nowhere to hide, the creatures of the deep have tried to make themselves harder to see.
The fishes are jet black. Other things are completely transparent. And often when you catch them and you look in a trawl bucket, you can't tell that it's there until you pour it out and then you see, oh, there's lots of stuff in there. It was just transparent.
Sutton says most deep-sea animals are less than a foot long, but they have surprisingly big heads, teeth, and fangs. Food is scarce in the open water, and they need to be able to eat almost anything they can find. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
On the road again.
And welcome back.
On the road again.
Willie the Master. 4 minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman here with you.
I can't wait to get on the road again.
Let's get back to the last little clip of this. This where Ashcroft, I mean, just imagine if Janet Reno had gone before the Republican-controlled Congress and said, no, senators, I refuse to give you copies of my advice to Bill Clinton about whether or not it was legal for him to make whoopee with anybody in the office, next to the Oval Office there or whatever, you know, in that office now where George keeps Saddam's gun, Bill used to use his gun, as they say. Anyhow, here's the final little bit. I mean, this is just over the top, in my opinion. And, oops, hang on just a second. I'm sorry. This just shut itself down. And there we go. Now, here.
Some of these memos may be classified in some ways for some purposes.
No, but that's not good enough.
I don't.
Mr. Attorney General, with all due respect, that is a complete evasion. What you have done is refuse to cite a statutory basis for disclosing these memos, refuse to claim executive privilege, and now suggest that some parts of these may be classified. Mr. Chairman, I hope we take this up very seriously.
In other words, Mr. Chairman, this guy is in contempt of Congress. Let's throw his butt in jail. Of course, Mr. Chairman, being a Republican, laughed at the idea, no doubt. On a lighter note, here's an Ashcroft alert. The Department of Justice today raided the University of Chicago's dinosaur lab and arrested paleontologist Paul Serino, graduate student Lloyd Crandall, for heresy violations of the Patriot Act. Specifically, talking about dinosaurs and evolution. The Attorney General said that the President had personally authorized this action in preparation for the rapture, which Mr. Bush assured Ashcroft should be happening any day now. Okay, yeah, it's. I thought we should have some lightness in there. That's from the Internet Weekly report. But the reality of this stuff is really serious. I mean, this really is serious stuff. Is the Attorney General above the law? Is the President of the United States above the law? Is it legitimate? You know, Ann Coulter said, you know, we should just kill their people or convert them to Christianity, right? Kill their leaders and convert them to Christianity. You know, is that the kind of America that we want to have in the world? Is that the example of democracy that we want to hold up for nations that are trying to emulate us? In 1989, this week, thousands of people died in Tiananmen Square carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché version of the Statue of Liberty. They called her the Goddess of Democracy, quoting Jefferson. Is this the kind of image? I mean, how much damage is being done to the ideals that have been historically called the American ideals around the world? It's awesome. This is Tom Hartman with you on the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Construction was to begin yesterday at Boston's Fleet Center in preparation for the Democratic National Convention coming to town next month. But picketing policemen have stymied the work. When construction workers showed up to the sports arena to begin the multi-million dollar job of turning it into a convention hall, the vast majority refused to cross the lines. The city's police, firefighters, and EMTs are just some of the 40% of the city's union workforce that's currently working without a contract. Talks between the city and police broke off day.
Tuesday was a big day for New York City's municipal unions. Blocking traffic and stretching several blocks down Broadway, 75,000 people rallied in support of the police, firefighters, and teachers' unions. Josephine Martinez Darrow, who worked in the New York City School District for over 30 years, spoke in front of City Hall.
I can sincerely tell you this has been the worst year as far as doing my job. I work as a full-time mentor, and hopefully we will be able to get a contract so things will be uplifted again and we will no longer have to go through the disrespect that we've been going through for many years already.
Participants said they want union contracts that include living wage pay increases, but Mayor Bloomberg says New York City can afford more than a 3% raise. Members of the United Federation of Teachers have been without a contract since last year. Unionists in the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association and the Uniformed Firefighters Association have been working without a contract for almost 2 years.
Workers at the Grupo M Levi's jeans factory in Haiti's Free Trade Zone went on strike Monday to protest harsh union-busting efforts, which are supposedly prohibited by the factory's major investor, the World Bank. Various campaigns of intimidation and abuse have been unleashed upon the workers there by management, who refuse to recognize a union which has majority support. In the last 2 weeks, workers report being strip-searched and beaten by members of the armed forces of the neighboring Dominican Republic. Some 36 workers have also been fired for union activity.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to new data released by the Census Bureau, school districts' debt rose by 12%, reaching $226 billion in the 2001-2002 school year. Major causes of debt include new school construction, a worsening U.S. economy, and stricter education guidelines. The data doesn't include Bush's No Child Left Behind program, which without increased federal funding is expected to sink districts even deeper into debt.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Alliance encourages you to get involved.net.
Sometimes it takes the unspeakable horror of war to unveil ugly truths about national policies that our so-called leaders don't want us to notice, much less discuss. Take, for example, the horrible news coming out of Iraq about contract workers for Halliburton and other war corporations being brutally killed and their bodies barbarically desecrated. Naturally, the first reaction is shock and outrage. But then, obvious questions come to mind. Why has so much of our military been corporatized? And who are the Halliburtons getting to take these dangerous jobs? The first question reveals the ugly fact that the military itself has become a for-profit enterprise. Corporations not only provide the weaponry, but increasingly they also provide the war personnel, everyone from armed troops to essential supply squadrons. This is rationalized on the basis that a Halliburton can do it cheaper. But do they? To get people to go to Iraq, Halliburton pays $80,000 to $100,000 a year for a truck driver or mess cook, plus health care and life insurance. Not to mention the overhead and guaranteed profit that Halliburton tacks onto each of the pay stubs it submits to us taxpayers. A soldier doing comparable work is paid a fourth of that. The second question speaks volumes about America's ugly economic policies. By deliberately pushing outsourcing, union-busting, and low-wage Walmart jobs, our corporate and political leaders have created a huge pool of the working poor. These are the people who, out of necessity, will take Halliburton's paycheck, even though it means separation from family, 14-hour days, 7 days a week, and exposure to kidnapping, torture, and death. Unlike soldiers, these contract workers are poorly prepared. They get only a week of training. This is Jim Hightower saying, what we have here is an immoral system of war profiteering at the expense of taxpayers, the working poor, and America's democratic values.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. Your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick update of the BuzzFlash thing. This is not a commercial announcement. I have nothing in this. I just think it's a great idea. It's a fun thing to do. Every month, I'll recommend a book, and over on BuzzFlash.com, they have a little thing. They publish a book review. You know, I'll write a few. This one's, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 paragraphs. Write a review of a book that I've read in the last month that I think is something that you would really find useful, that you would really actually enjoy reading. I read a lot, and I read a lot of books that are, like, really kind of dry and boring and theoretical and stuff like that. And I'm not, you know, I would never recommend those kind of books just to everybody, right? And last month it was Class Warfare in America by Charles Kelly, which I still think is probably, and which was published several years ago, but I still think is absolutely essential reading. But we have a new large type on relatively small pages, it's a hardcover, called Inventing a Nation, Washington, Adams, Jefferson. That's the title. And it's just a marvelous little kind of insight into America. Let me just read two quick paragraphs from it, just so you get a sense of it. He says, although Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and Hamilton each favored the creation of a republic, each saw the original blueprint from a different angle. Power. Due to optical shape, he was dubbed his rotundity. But Adams was too practical to try to impose on the new republic something so like what they were ridding themselves of. Hamilton argued that every society produces a ruling class. Why not accept this given without fuss? Keep in mind, Adams and Hamilton are the progenitors, the early conservative thinkers in America. They are the fathers of conservative thought in America. It's one of the reasons why John Adams' biography in the last couple of years has been so heavily promoted by the conservatives and the Republicans. I mean, he was the first to be promoting this point of view. As Hamilton said, why not accept this given without a fuss? In 1787 at Philadelphia, he opened, as it were, his closet door. Quote, all, and we're quoting Alexander Hamilton now, all communities divide themselves into the few and the many. The first are the rich and well-born, then the mass of the people. The people are turbulent and changing. They seldom judge or determine right. Give, therefore, to the first class, that being the rich and well-born, a distinct permanent share in the government. They will check the unsteadiness of the second, that being the working people. And as they cannot receive any advantage by change, they therefore will ever maintain good government. And that, of course, is this is an excerpt now from Gore Vidal's Inventing a Nation, Washington, Adams, and Jefferson, my recommended book of the month. We're gonna try and get Gore on as a, or Mr. Vidal, on as a guest here this month. It's a marvelous book. And for those of you who really have a good understanding of American history, who have read Charles Beard's 1932 classic, the Rise of American Civilization, or even have read my book, We the People, which there's a lot of nuance. You know, Vidal just kind of bumps over the top of a lot of things, and it'll have a lot more meaning to you if you're well grounded in American history. If you're not well grounded in American history, what it'll do is it'll whet your appetite for more. It'll just, you know, it's a marvelous book. So I just, you know, wanted to let you know that, share that with you. Something, it's not the news, it's not any big deal, not an attempt to pay the bills here or anything like that. It's just something worth knowing. To the news, CNN filed a lawsuit against Florida's election divisions Friday. These guys are at it again. You know, it's like the crime on top of the crime. I mean, where it gets really, really strange. Where it gets really, really strange. In fact, before I tell you about the CNN story, let me tell you about what people for the American Way are asking of the state of Florida. Ed Cast, president, this is from a news release that they sent out a couple days ago. Cast resignation prompts new concerns on Florida voting purge fall election. Ed Cast, people for the American Way Foundation, called for renewed efforts to restore voters wrongly purged from the voting rolls in 1999 and 2000. Bet you didn't know that they hadn't been put back on yet. Remember, before the election, Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush got together and took some
Well, the whole number was in the neighborhood of 90,000 people, and we know now for sure that at least 40 or 50,000 of them, well, we don't know it for sure because it hasn't been adjudicated, but what is claimed in the lawsuit by the ACLU with good, solid documentation is that at least 40 to 50,000 of them are African Americans in primarily Democratic districts in Florida who have never committed a crime and who were legally registered voters, were not allowed to vote, even though they showed up and tried to vote in the 2000 election in Florida. 40 to 50,000 people. People say, Republicans like to say, oh, the election wasn't stolen. The Supreme Court decided it fair and square. It was stolen before it ever got to the Supreme Court. It was stolen before the votes were counted. Come on. Well, I you know, in my naivete, I knew that they had been ordered by a federal court to restore those people to the voters' rolls. And I remember when the 2002 election happened, being shocked to discover that those 40,000, 50,000 people still had not been restored to the voting rolls. In other words, they still couldn't vote. Well, it could have been the decisive margin that would have thrown Jeb Bush out of office. But the court ruled that they had to be restored before 2004. And People for the American Way is calling on the state of Florida to reverse the state's priorities to make restoration of writers wrongfully disenfranchised in 1999 and 2000 the top priority for the next director of elections, Dawn Roberts. In other words, what has happened is the state has said, I am not kidding you. I'm not making this up. The state has said, we'll deal with it after the 2004 election. As a spokesman for People for the American Way said, the state should be doing all it can to put voters back on the rolls, not take more off. Now, that gets us to the take more off part of the story, as it were. First of all, the head of Florida's Elections Division resigned Monday. This guy by the name of Ed Cast. The story is, I mean, he's saying the same thing that Tenet said. And by the way, I have a feeling that the reason George Tenet resigned is because he sees this ship is sinking. And he doesn't want to be sucked into the vortex. I mean, you know, crimes have been committed and criminals are going to be prosecuted. And Ed Cast was just told by Jeb Bush, you know that voter list we've got? I want you to pull another 40, 50,000 names off it. 47,000, to be specific. And Cast, when he was told by Jeb Bush to pull another 47,000 names off the Florida registered voter list, quit his job. Family reasons. Just time to move on. Guy's 53 years old, I think, 51, 52, something like that. It wasn't like he was quite eligible for retirement. 53 he is. He says he wasn't resigning because of problems at the agency. Simply wanted to pursue other interests after working at the Department of State since 1994. But just time to move along. He got a sudden interest in fly fishing. I'm mangling. He got a sudden interest in, I don't know, maybe he's going to start an internet pornography, but who knows? Anyhow, he's decided to quit. And the word is, well, here's to quote the Sun Sentinel, the newspaper in Tallahassee, the capital of Florida. Cast has told a room full of associates that he was uncomfortable with growing pressure to trim felons from voter rolls in time for the fall election, friends say. he doesn't want to have the reputation Catherine Harris had, although she was well rewarded. She was given a seat in Congress for 2 years, although she was told, don't run again, Catherine, please. You're an embarrassment. U.S. Senator Bill Nelson, just 2 hours before Cast resigned, had joined a lawsuit against the state of Florida, asking, actually trying to force them. I mean, it's a lawsuit. You win a lawsuit, it's the force of law. Forcing them to reveal the names of 47,000 suspected felons who could be dropped from voting lists, saying he wanted to be sure the mistakes of 2000 are not repeated. The Florida Democrat, U.S. Senator Bill Nelson, said, this year, Ohio and Florida are looked upon as the two states that could decide the presidential election, and we just can't go through this again. By the way, nobody knows what's happening with the list in Ohio. What we do know is that Ohio is the home state of Diebold, and the good old Wally, the CEO of Diebold, has written a letter to the Ohio Republicans saying he will do everything in his power to ensure the what he calls re-election of George W. Bush in Ohio. And then on top of this now, CNN has filed a lawsuit, this is where I began with this thing, against Florida's election division on Friday for access to a list of almost 48,000 possible felons who may be deleted from voter rolls. The state forwards the list to county election officials to determine which individuals are ineligible to vote. In the last general election, it's estimated, this is a quote from CNN and in their May 28th complaint, in the last general election, it's estimated that thousands of voters were turned away from the polls after the Florida Division of Elections sent counties an inaccurate list of 173,142 suspected felons and other persons not eligible to vote. They go on to say nearly all of the people wrongfully purged from Florida's voter list in 2000 were Democrats, and more than half were African Americans, according to an investigative series by BBC reporter Greg Pallas. I'm reading this from CNN. This from CNN. With only 6 months, the CNN complaint says, with only 6 months remaining until the next election, the issue of potential voter disenfranchisement is of critical importance. Yeah, I would say so. They're at it again. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to weigh in, it's Tom Harpin.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today.
call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Casey joins the hollow sound of silent people walking down the stairway to the subway in the shadows down below.
Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here, back with you. 1-866-889-8894 if you would like to toss in your thoughts on the subject of the day. Storm, listening to us on WINI in Murfreesboro, Illinois, is on the line. Hey, Storm, welcome to the program, and thanks for listening to WINI.
Well, thank you, Tom. Tom, I understand that the authorities in Europe have captured 17 or so of the suspected terrorists that blew up the train in Madrid.
Right.
And also 15 or so more they captured in both Belgium and Italy. How can this be, Tom? Don't you think that maybe the Spanish should have invaded Denmark or something to catch these suspects?
Well, here's the thing, Storm. They've been dealing with terrorism in Europe for a long, long time. I mean, the Spanish have had the Basques around the Basques have been trying to declare independence. Interestingly, just last night in one of the science magazines I was reading, they have just found off the coast of Spain what they think is the sunken island of Atlantis. And the Basques, of course, they have a language that has no European root language, and they've been claiming that they are the descendants of Atlantis. But anyhow, ETA, the Basque separatist group,
right,
has been dealing with the Spanish. The Greeks had the November 17 group. The Red Brigades were Italy or Germany? I forget which was which. I think the Black Hand was in Germany, the Turkish terrorist group. They've there have been various Muslim groups, probably a half a dozen over the last 30 years that have sprung up in France, most of them based in Algerian independence movements, and the IRA in Britain. And what they figured out is that a long time ago was that if you elevate these guys in status to that of some kind of, you know, really important paramilitary group. I mean, this is the mistake that some would say the British made with the IRA in the early. Of course, you know, others would say, you know, trying to take over Ireland was their mistake. I'm not going to get in the middle of that one. But in any case, the point is what they discovered was that you can deal with terrorists in one of two ways. You can take them on as if they were an army, and go after them by military means and give up your own civil rights. I mean, keep in mind, Hitler claimed that it was communists and Jews who had burned the Reichstagsgebäude and therefore justified everything that he did from that point forward. Or you can deal with them as common criminals, like Bill Clinton did with Tim McVeigh, who committed one of the most massive acts of terrorism in the history of the United States, and he killed, 288 people, I believe, at the Murrah Building. And they figured out that the second method works, and the first method just makes things worse.
So you're saying that the president may have made a mistake here. Huh?
What do you think, Storm?
Well, I don't know. Invading Denmark or Switzerland might have been interesting. You know, they wouldn't have found any terrorists there. But
that's right. Yeah. Well, you know, they have resources. I mean, you know, after all,
oil or something.
I mean, we get attacked by 15 Saudis flying airplanes and from a Saudi guy who's living in Afghanistan, and we invade Iraq. But, you know, let us not forget that as Dick Cheney would have us never, ever forget that
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, there's a lot of oil there. So, you know, got to do what you got to do, right?
The Saudis, the same folks that have financed the construction of 1,200 mosques right here in the United States.
Yeah, I think this is now, Storm, you've gotten to the real core of the problem, and that is that what we're fighting is an idea, not a people. People are not born terrorists.
Right.
People are not born good or evil.
They're taught just like the Germans were taught by Hitler.
There you go. And if we want to attack something, to use that language, we need to be attacking the what is feeding that thinking. And Saudi Arabia is the core of it. It certainly has been. That doesn't mean we should attack Saudi Arabia, but we certainly need to get them to change this whole promotion of Wahhabism, this very toxic form of Islam around the world. Storm, thanks for the call.
From their own recent experiences.
Yeah, the Saudi, it's what is it, feed the storm, reap the whirlwind, or whatever the old Ecclesiastes saying is. Anyhow, Storm, thanks for the call from Southern Illinois there. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Construction was to begin yesterday at Boston's Fleet Center in preparation for the Democratic National Convention coming to town next month, but picketing policemen have stymied the work. When construction workers showed up to the sports arena to begin the multi-million dollar job of turning it into a convention hall, the vast majority refused to cross the lines. The city's police, firefighters, and EMTs are just some of the 40% of the city's union workforce that's currently working without a contract. Talks between the city and police broke off Monday.
Tuesday was a big day for New York City's municipal unions. Blocking traffic and stretching several blocks down Broadway, 75,000 people rallied in support of the police, firefighters, and teachers' unions. Josephine Martinez Darrow, who worked in the New York City School District for over 30 years, spoke in front of City Hall.
I can sincerely tell you this has been the worst year as far as doing my job. I work as a full-time mentor, and hopefully we will be able to get a contract so things will be uplifted again, and we will no longer have to go through the disrespect that we've been going through for many years already.
Participants said they want union contracts that include living wage pay increases, but Mayor Bloomberg says New York City can't afford more than a 3% raise. Members of the United Federation of Teachers have been without a contract since last year. Unionists in the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association and the Uniformed Firefighters Association have been working without a contract for almost 2 years.
Workers at the Grupo M Levi's jeans factory in Haiti's Free Trade Zone went on strike Monday to protest harsh union-busting efforts, which are supposedly prohibited by the factory's major investor, the World Bank. Various campaigns of intimidation and abuse have been unleashed upon the workers there by management, who refuse to recognize a union which has majority support. In the last 2 weeks, workers report being strip-searched and beaten by members of the armed forces of the neighboring Dominican Republic. Some three dozen workers have also been fired for union activity.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
According to new data released by the Census Bureau, school districts' debt rose by 12%, reaching $226 billion in the 2001-2002 school year. Major causes of debt include new school construction, a worsening U.S. economy, and stricter education guidelines. The data doesn't include Bush's No Child Left Behind program, which without increased federal funding is expected to sink districts even deeper into debt.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide.
Red Brigades were in Italy. Thank you, Pesca. I thought so. But, you know, you never know. It's sometimes I get these things wrong. And I always appreciate it when, the folks in our chat room in particular keep me straight. And do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. I assume you're listening on WTKG there.
Yeah. I am. That's the only station that carries anything like this. Everything else around here is so neocon.
Well, you got to start somewhere.
I actually called Phil Tower a couple times, he does not want to put the third hour of you on here.
Well,
so everybody in Grand Rapids is listening. Call Phil Tower and bug him.
No, Tom. We can't. Let's move along to a topic.
All right. Good enough.
Yeah. Thanks.
No, I just called. It's so good to have you on out here, and so good to have somebody talking some common sense about this so-called war that's going on.
Yeah,
it's amazing how dead the conversation gets. And you were talking a while ago with a guy, that fellow wrote a book about how Iraq. There is no connection with 9/11, and you get in the conversation, or you don't. I get in the conversation so often, and people say that, we have more reason to bomb Florida than we do Iraq. There was more of those hijackers that lived in Florida. They had strong connections to Florida.
Yeah.
None of them had connections with Iraq.
But Florida doesn't have oil. And Florida, we are right now, we are paying $1.65 a gallon for gasoline in Jordan. Trucking, paying a corporation, and it's not Halliburton anymore, but it's another, crony corporation of the, good buddies with the Bush administration. His cousins over there setting these things up, one of the Bush cousins. $1.65 an hour, a gallon for gasoline in Jordan, trucking it into Baghdad and selling it for 5 cents a gallon in gas stations. We are rebuilding their hospitals. We're rebuilding their schools. Yes, we broke it. We should fix it. I'm not on the surface complaining about that. I don't think it should ever have had happened in the first place. We have spent $200 billion. Grand Rapids is, I think, the 134th largest city in America, or no, it's larger than that. I think you're in the 50s, as I recall, in the United States. You're certainly within the top 200. So imagine if the top 200 cities in America each were given $1 billion. What could Grand Rapids do with $1 billion? What kind of improvements could you make to your schools? How would you fix your roads? What sort of extraordinary things could be done in Grand Rapids with $1 billion? And this war of choice that George got us into is crazy.
Well, that's the other thing. It is a war of choice. It's not a declared war.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, it's totally unconstitutional. Article 1, Section 8, Congress shall declare war.
There you go. Although
not just authorize use of force.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And I would say all the way back to World War II, all of these, you know, all of these conflicts that we've been in.
Korea wasn't ever called a war. It was called a police action, then later called a conflict, and then called a war 25 years after it was over with.
Right.
And Vietnam, you're old enough to remember, that was a conflict until the mid-80s sometime.
Yeah, yeah. And then they just called it a war basically as a euphemism. I mean, it was, you're right.
And none of this has any disrespect to do with our soldiers. It has to do with the people that sent them there.
Yeah, no, this is our politicians. And beyond that, it's not just our politicians, and not to blame the victims, but it is we the people. I mean, we have to get involved.
Are.
We have to get involved. We have to wake people up. We have to be spreading the word. We have to be winning the water cooler wars. We have to share the word. If we don't...
willing to play ignorant.
Yeah, in fact, our quote from the day is from Mahatma Gandhi. Let me just throw this at you real quickly. The things that will destroy us are politics without principle, pleasure without conscience, wealth without work, knowledge without character, business without morality, science without humanity, and worship without sacrifice. Isn't that great? And his first one, politics without principle, is increasingly what I'm seeing. Tom, thank you for the call.
Great to take it.
Thank you. Oh, my pleasure. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Nora in California is on the line. Hey, Nora, what's up?
Hey, well, the guy who is calling about the torture thing, you know, I've come to find out that actually on the books it's Law Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 113C, Section 2340A, makes torture illegal and an impeachable offense.
This is, you're talking federal law?
It's federal law, U.S.
Mm-hmm.
law.
Yep.
Those who commit torture and if death results can actually be punished by death if there is any conspiracy to commit torture. This is an offense, but not necessarily a death penalty, but can be imprisoned for life. Okay.
You think this might have something to do... Nora, by the way, Adam forgot to ask you what city you're in California.
Eureka.
Oh, so you're listening to us on...
KGOE.
Great. And greetings to KGOE. So do you think this might have something to do with why George Tenet and the number two guy at the CIA both just resigned suddenly on the same day?
I'm not sure if it's that or over the plane issue.
Yeah.
And the other guy, the second guy, Pavitt, what's his name?
Yeah, something like that.
Because seeing as they'd be facing a felony,
being
that they were Plame's boss. And obviously, somehow they would have had to known all her connections.
And George W.'s got a lawyer now, and Dick Cheney's got a lawyer, and this ostensibly all has to do with Plame.
And it seems just on the coincidence of Bush hiring a lawyer and Bush forcing Tenet to resign.
Yeah.
Or firing him, actually. So I put those two together. I think if Tenet would have resigned, I think he would have resigned a long time ago if there was another issue.
Yeah, could be. Don't.
And I think the torture issue is something else. And so far on my research, I've shown it's gone all the way up to Rumsfeld. And also that Albert Gonzalez told Bush
Alberto Gonzalez.
The Geneva Conventions would no longer work.
Yeah, Alberto Gonzalez, by the way, was Bush's buddy attorney. I forget what position he held in Texas with him. He brought him to the White House, and the word on the street for years now has been that he's going to go from the White House to the Supreme Court. I'm serious. I mean, you know, it's he's the guy that Bush would like to see on the Supreme Court if he gets a second term.
Scary.
Yeah, and you know he's White House counsel, and
I mean, this is a law for national and international against torture.
Yeah,
and now we're hearing reports about torture in U.S. prisons. So I mean, it's an all around thing that needs to be addressed, and it is against the law, nationally and internationally, and yet here we have our administration saying, go for it, guys.
Yeah, and the president, and this just came out yesterday in the New York Times, the president actually receiving a letter from his lawyers in the White House saying that we can get around the laws against torture. Don't worry. Be happy. Nora, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Yes, and good luck to you, too, getting the word out.
Thank you. You, too. You know, if you can tell 10 people and they tell 10 people and on it goes.
Well,
you know.
I called my two senators and my representative, and if everybody did that and took 5 minutes of the day and made this a real democracy.
There you go.
We can change things.
Yep, and don't forget to tell all your friends to listen to KGOE.
I will.
Okay, thanks, Nora. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 18 minutes before the hour. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on. We've got the lines are really lit up here today. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
Good. Say, is there any way we can get Jimmy Carter and the Black Panthers to go down to that little dictatorship in that third world country of Florida and make sure those people are allowed to vote?
Isn't it embarrassing? I mean, it's like a banana republic.
Yeah, it sure is. It's probably the third world country gone mad, you know.
Yeah, and you know, I wrote a piece for Common Dreams. It's on our the archives. If you go to tomhartman.com and click articles on democracy, it's about a year and a half old now. Called "Let's Take the Bananas Out of the Republic." You know, about this whole thing about. I mean, how would the world think if some third world country had a presidential election and the state that threw the election happened to be governed by the brother of the guy who won the election, and it was highly contested, and it was discovered that there were all these shenanigans, and yet, you know, he continued to be president. I mean, you know, it is embarrassing, frankly.
Well,
it sounds
like the old Saddam election of last time around, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, you know, let's give the United States a little more credit than that, actually.
Well, yeah, there are 40-some states that are better than that.
Yeah, well, hopefully the majority of them, although here is something that really concerns me about the Help America Vote Act. In 2001, after the 2000 election, in order to, quote, clean up the problem, you know, the hanging chads and dimple chads and all this stuff that happened in Florida, I mean, of course, this was an effort by the Republicans to deflect attention away from the real theft of the vote, which was knocking, you know, taking 137,000 people off the voters' rolls, 50, 60,000 of them being largely African-American, virtually all Democrats in Florida. And, you know, deflecting their attention from that. But anyhow, they passed this Help America Vote Act to transfer $5 billion of taxpayer money into the pockets of three very large voting machine companies in particular. One of them, Chuck Hagel, was formerly the president of ES&S. The other one, Diebold, you know, good old Wally in Ohio, who's good buddies with George, and so on. And in the Help America Vote Act is buried this little piece that says that every state shall compile a statewide registry of voters. Now, the problem with this, up until this happened, local counties and local people kept track of the local voters, and they were the ones who would know. You know, hey, you know, hey, did you know that Ralph died? He moved out of town. You know, that kind of thing, right? Or whatever. But now in most of the states, the Secretary of State, who is responsible for making sure that list of voters is accurate, is either an elected position, which is political, or an appointed position, which is political. And so now we are putting in the hands, as opposed to the local county officials who were responsible for, you know, taking care of the voter rolls, who are typically civil servants. I mean, lifetime civil servants.
Right.
We have put in the hands of politicians the mechanisms of politics. I mean, I find this incredibly scary.
Sounds like Big Brother to me.
Yeah, it certainly has the potential to be, and that's why, you know, as Thomas Jefferson said, democracy will not be safe unless there is an alert and an aware citizenry, and that's us. That's
us. I don't have a problem with electronic voting as long as there's a receipt so that we know who voted which way.
Well, no, it has to go beyond a receipt, because a receipt can tell you one thing, but the vote could be recorded as another thing. The magic word here is ballot. These electronic voting machines should print a ballot, and then the ballot goes into the box, and you get a receipt to take home with you if you want, but they need to print a ballot. And that way, if there's ever an audit, see, if you only had a receipt and there was an audit, they'd have to call up everybody and say, hey, would you please bring back your receipt so we can look at it? Ain't going to happen. Ain't going to work. Start using the word ballot instead of the word receipt. That's the critical thing. And, in fact, that's one of the confusions that these voting machine folks are trying to sow. I got to move along here, Rick. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Kevin in Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
Good.
And don't bomb us.
Don't bomb us. What are you talking about? Oh, don't buy. You're in Florida. That's right. That's Rick in Grand Rapids is suggesting. Okay, Michigan is on its way. Look out.
And contrary to what you said, actually, Florida does have some oil.
Florida does have oil?
Oh, sure.
Don't tell Rick.
It's a big election issue, too, about whether they're going to allow drilling or not.
Oh, that's right. It's offshore, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, George Bush got a variance just before the 2002 elections to prevent this drilling from happening so that it wouldn't hurt his brother in the 2002 elections.
Yes.
Yeah. Playing games.
Well, anyway, I called because you were talking about the election fiasco down here.
Mm-hmm.
And the resignation of this head of election, whatever his job
was. Yeah, Ed
was.
Cast, yeah.
Had some more information for you on that.
Okay.
That I know. I happen to be friends with a person who is running for supervisor election in Hillsborough County, which is Tampa.
Right.
And we had a good supervisor here. There was no problems in Hillsborough in 2000, but she was elected mayor a year ago of Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeb got to appoint one of his cronies in her place until the election.
Oh, God.
He, of course, he doesn't want any paper trail. It is the big issue about the election.
Sure.
The head of our dean group down here is actually running for the position.
Great.
And Howard Dean has already endorsed him.
That's great. Great.
But anyway,
here's
the thing I was getting at.
Okay.
What they did up in Tallahassee,
mm-hmm.
they threatened, you didn't mention this, you may not know, they actually threatened in public any supervisor of election who does not purge the 40-some thousand list that they're sending out with criminal sanctions and criminal charges if they don't purge the list. And the supervisor of elections are revolting, and in fact, they are having a meeting, a conference or something in a little while, I don't know exactly when, in order to discuss how to handle this with Tallahassee.
Oh, that's interesting. So, folks, the supervisors of elections who still have not yet been able to put back on the people who were taken off 3 years ago are being told to take more off, and if they don't, they can go to jail, and they're trying to get together to... That's
exactly.
Incredible. That's incredible. The plot thickens. Kevin, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman with you here. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
The eastern United States is the scene of one of the largest insect events in the world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cicadas are big brown bugs that spend most of their life underground. Some species emerge every year to reproduce. Others arrive in cycles that run several years. The largest group of all, known as Brood 10, comes up from underground only once every 17 years. When they arrive, everyone knows about it, and this is their year. Mike Raup is an entomologist at the University of Maryland who studies the Brood 10 insects. He says these cicadas are about an inch and a half long, and they're known for their huge populations.
We hear estimates anywhere from 100,000 to 1.5 million per acre. So these are enormous densities, and these are very large insects for those kinds of densities.
The range of the Brood 10 cicadas extends south from New Jersey to Georgia and as far west as Illinois. Raup says the 17 years they spend underground makes a lot of sense. No predator will live long enough to remember these insects and plan for their return, and Raup says coming out in huge numbers has its own benefits.
It becomes a safety in numbers game. By emerging in huge, huge numbers in any given location, the cicadas simply are far too abundant for any predator to consume them all.
Raup says predators do eat them, and the list of predators includes skunks and squirrels, fish, turtles, snakes, and birds. But the big brown bugs will still manage to produce billions of offspring. They'll be the generation of Brood 10 cicadas that will arrive 17 years from now. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate and to discriminate. Only
and welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Renee in Anderson, South Carolina is on the line. We have been running a contest now, well, ever since essentially Tom Tancredo, I had the congressman from Colorado on, a Republican, and I said, can you please name for me one piece of legislation out of the tens of thousands of laws that have been proposed in the 3 years that George Bush has been president, and the thousands, perhaps tens of thousands, I don't know, that have been passed into law and signed by the president that had at just one that had as its primary purpose the assistance of human beings or democracy, as opposed to, as its primary purpose, the assistance of corporations or corporate power. And, Renee, do you have an answer?
I do.
You do? You may win a copy.
Say that again.
I was going to say, you may win a copy of my book, We the People, if you've got it here. So what is it?
I'm really excited about.
What is it?
Okay, I found one. It took some searching, but it was the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act of 2003. He signed it November the 5th, 2003.
Okay. Well, you know, that actually, that, you know, yeah.
Because that was the closest I can find.
Yeah, that's...
Because I was like, well, at least he was benefiting his Christian fundamentalists but I didn't know if corporations would have actually made money from it.
Yeah, okay. You know, somebody else is actually Tom Tancredo, I think, had suggested that. And I you know, I said, you know, that really benefits. I mean, you know, there's maybe 17 or 18 people a year, I think, who have that procedure, and it's almost always because the mother's going to die if it's not done. And, you know, it's a very rare thing. And that was principally a political trick as opposed to, you know, serious legislation. But, you know, okay, I'm not going to agree with you that was a piece of legislation that was principally for we the people or democracy, because I don't think it was. I think it was cynical politics. But I will send you a book, because I really appreciate your effort in searching on this thing. I think it's absolutely great. Renee, let me put you back on hold, and Adam will take your address, and we'll send you off a book. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's not like, you know, Social Security or, you know, let's improve our education system in a way that doesn't first assist corporations, or, you know, let's fix Medicare in a way that doesn't first benefit the pharmaceutical companies. Close shot, Renee. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle, right here on the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Construction was to begin yesterday at Boston's Fleet Center in preparation for the Democratic National Convention coming to town next month. But picketing policemen have stymied the work. When construction workers showed up to the sports arena to begin the multi-million dollar job of turning it into a convention hall, the vast majority refused to cross the lines. The city's police, firefighters, and EMTs are just some of the 40% of the city's union workforce that's currently working without a contract. Talks between the city and police broke off Monday.
Tuesday was a big day for New York City's municipal unions. Blocking traffic and stretching several blocks down Broadway, 75,000 people rallied in support of the police, firefighters, and teachers unions. Josephine Martinez Darrow, who worked in the New York City School District for over 30 years, spoke in front of City Hall.
I can sincerely tell you this has been the worst year as far as doing my job. I work as a full-time mentor, and hopefully we will be able to get a contract so things will be uplifted again, and we will no longer have to go through the disrespect that we've been going through for many years already.
Participants said they want union contracts that include living wage pay increases, but Mayor Bloomberg says New York City can afford more than a 3% raise. Members of the United Federation of Teachers have been without a contract since last year. Unionists in the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association and the Uniformed Firefighters Association have been working without a contract for almost 2 years.
Workers at the Grupo M Levi's Jeans Factory in Haiti's Free Trade Zone went on strike Monday to protest harsh union-busting efforts, which are supposedly prohibited by the factory's major investor, the World Bank. Various campaigns of intimidation and abuse have been unleashed upon the workers there by management, who refuse to recognize a union which has majority support. In the last 2 weeks, workers report being strip-searched and beaten by members of the armed forces of the neighboring Dominican Republic. Some three dozen workers have also been fired for union activity.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to new data released by the Census Bureau, school districts' debt rose by 12%, reaching $226 billion in the 2001-2002 school year. Major causes of debt include new school construction, a worsening U.S. economy, and stricter education guidelines. The data doesn't include Bush's No Child Left Behind program, which without increased federal funding is expected to sink districts even deeper into debt.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Suppose an amendment was proposed to give corporations a constitutional right to buy our government with their big money donations to politicians. Wouldn't you fight such an arrogant power grab? Well, gird yourself, for an amendment that does exactly that has been proposed, not in Washington, but in Arizona. This is one of six states where voters have approved clean election laws that provide public funds for candidates who agree to accept no special interest money. Not only is this public alternative popular with candidates of all political parties, since they no longer have to spend endless hours kissing corporate butts to be able to run for office, but it also works. In Arizona, for example, 9 of the 11 statewide officials, including the governor, and a third of the legislature, have been elected without taking a dime from the corporate powers, thus owing nothing to them. This has, of course, infuriated the old power clique, which is used to buying these officials and running things. So assorted corporate interests have put up hundreds of thousands of dollars to put a constitutional amendment on the Arizona ballot this fall that bans the use of public funds for clean elections, forcing the state back to the bad old days of corporate-funded and corporate-controlled politicians. The people of Arizona, however, are fighting back with a Keep It Clean campaign to defeat this big-money power grab, and they need our help. To battle the $10,000 and $20,000 checks that all of the corporate fat cats are putting up, they need us alley cats from all over America to chip in $5 each to keep Arizona clean. We need to spread clean elections, not kill them, and Arizona is the place for all democracy fighters to take a stand. This is Jim Hightower saying, Abe Lincoln, who said we should have a government of, by, and for the people, is pictured on a $5 bill. To support that ideal, send your own Abe to Arizona. To donate $5, call 202-293-0222.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the world on radiopower.org. Broadcasting, of course, on radio stations across the country. Down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. And who knows, even maybe on the planet Theta, they are hearing our signal. So that when the Thetans come to take all the clear Scientologists up into the sky... hopefully they won't be looking for me. I don't know. We'll see. Anyhow, welcome back. On this day in history, Joseph Welch, he was a soft-spoken lawyer, spoke up, finally. He finally spoke up. Joe McCarthy was the chairman of the Senate Government Operations Committee, and he had been raging about the communists. Previously in the Roosevelt administration, now in the Truman administration, and then Eisenhower, and in 1954, on this day in history, as McCarthy had he was interrogating Welch. And every single charge that McCarthy made, Welch was able to very respectfully deflect. In other words, say, you know, that's not true, and here's the evidence. And when he would do this, sometimes McCarthy would even cut him off, screaming, literally screaming, "Point of order! Point of order!" He was screamed at witnesses. He stuck his finger in one highly decorated general and called him a disgrace to his uniform. Finally, today, this is the guy, by the way, that Ann Coulter wrote a book, you know, celebrating. It's today, on this day in history, McCarthy charged that a young man by the name of Frederick G. Fisher, who was an associate in Welch's law firm, a lawyer that Welch had known for years and years and years, young guy, but you know he had known him. He was a mentee of Welch. McCarthy said that Frederick Fisher is a longtime member of an organization that was a legal arm of the Communist Party. Welch was stunned. As he struggled to regain his composure, he looked at McCarthy and declared, "Until this moment, Senator, I think I never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness." McCarthy, at that point, you know, he was stunned into silence. And Welch continued, "Have you no sense of decency, sir, at long last?" And as he said that, this room full of people, the audience, the citizens who were there, which was, there were quite a few. I mean, this was a spectacle, but also all the reporters, radio, television, print, television was, you know, new then, but there were television reporters, spontaneously stood up and started applauding. A week later, McCarthy's hearings came to a close. He'd been exposed as a reckless bully. The United States Senate passed a resolution officially condemning him for contempt of his colleagues in December of 1954. And in the 2.5 years after that, he became so severely alcoholic, and most biographers would say he had been alcoholic most of his life. But in the following 2.5 years, he became... functionally dysfunctional. He died 2.5 years later in 1957 of complications of alcoholism. So on this day, Joe McCarthy got his. That's a good day in history. Something nice to think about. Today's Wall Street Journal, interesting article on Mercury. The Mercury issue takes wing. By the way, our number 1-866-889-8894. Just to let you know here, if you'd like to opine on the issues of the day. Last November 4th, Greg Hitt writes in today's Wall Street Journal an article titled Mercury Issue Takes Wings. This is fascinating. Last November 4th, think back to, you know, last fall. Officials of the White House and the EPA met with a handful of representatives of coal-burning utilities, including the veteran lobby for the DTE Energy Company, known in lobbying circles as Mr. Mercury. Who is Mr. Mercury? Yes, there actually is a guy that they refer to as Mr. Mercury. He's a lobbyist for DTE Energy, which is one of the utilities that burns lots and lots of coal. And, of course, you burn coal, and among the stuff that comes out the smokestacks is mercury. It gets up into the air. It falls downwind 100 miles, 200 miles, 500 miles, 1,000 miles, gets into the watersheds, makes its way into the rivers, gets into fish, gets into human bodies, causes birth defects. There's actually a bunch of folks out there who say that it's the cause of a whole bunch of different psychiatric conditions, ranging from autism to ADD to personality disorders. I mean, nobody knows. Nobody knows. What we do know is that it's incredibly toxic. Remember the phrase, mad as a hatter? Back in the era of Dickens, back in the 18th century, 17th, 18th century, the way that they made top hats, the very, very elegant top hats, where they took a various types of pelts. Beaver was one of the more common, actually. Most people don't realize. And they would take it down to the skin, make the skin very, very thin, and make the hair, shorten the hair and felt it down in a way, and that was one way that hats were made. The other way was by making felt, which was either out of, I believe it was cotton, may have been wool, but it was various fibers that were formed together. And in both cases, they used mercury in the process of doing these. In the one hand, as a component in tanning the hides; in the other hand, I never have made a hat, so I don't remember the mechanism. I actually learned it once, but I think it was a binder. It was part of the binder that held together the hats. But in any case, people who made hats back then, top hats, the old-fashioned hats, handled mercury on a daily basis, and they became insane constantly. I mean, they were just all the time. They were nuts. It was mercury poisoning. Thus the phrase mad as a hatter. Well, Mr. Mercury, speaking of mad as a hatter, a lobbyist for DTE Energy, for 3 years, the Wall Street Journal notes in this article by Greg Hitt, the utilities and their allies, the coal producers, had scored a series of victories on environmental issues for 3 years. That is basically since George W. Bush came into office. What a surprise. Now they're trying to drive a stake through the heart of a costly directive dating from the Clinton administration to sharply reduce mercury emissions by requiring expensive equipment at each of the nation's 1,100 largest power plants, most of them coal-fired. And guess what? Surprise, surprise! A little more than a month later, reports the Wall Street Journal, the industry largely got its wish. A little later in the article, Greg Hitt notes, in this case, the business with a stake in the mercury decision have made sure they remained on the president's good side. 6 weeks before the crucial November meeting, Detroit-based DTE Energy hosted the president as he donned a hard hat, no, not a felt hat, and toured a Michigan power plant. The week before the November 4th meeting, more than $90,000 in donations poured into the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign from employees and family members of utilities and coal mining companies, including $19,700 from employees of American Electric Power in Columbus, Ohio, which had its own lobbyist at the White House meeting. AEP is the nation's largest utility and largest emitter of mercury. AEP, by the way, the Wall Street Journal notes, would like you to know, that they say there was no connection between the donations and the meeting. But as Hitt continues, Greg Hitt continues in this article, Mercury issue takes wings in today's Wall Street Journal. The Mercury issue is notable for another reason. It shows the importance of behind-the-scenes officials tapped for powerful jobs by the new president. Jeffrey Homestead, the top official at the EPA Air Policy Office, his close aide William Wellrum, and James Conaton, head of the White House Council of Environmental Quality. Who are these guys? The top three EPA air people who have to do with whether or not there's mercury in your food and your water and your air? Well, notes the Wall Street Journal. All three were lawyers who entered government with close ties to business. Mr. Conaton once represented General Electric Company in legal tussles with the EPA over the cleanup of the Hudson River. Mr. Homestead had worked along with Mr. Wellrum for Latham & Watkins, a firm that represents corporations in environmental disputes. Can anybody spell foxes guarding the henhouse? Yes, I suspect so. Utilities, in fact, the article notes, utilities donated nearly $500 million to the Bush effort and millions more in so-called soft money, largely unregulated checks to the Republican Party. So far this campaign season, utilities and mining companies have raised more than $1 million for the Bush-Cheney war chest. He points out this is a sharp change, I'm quoting here from the Wall Street Journal, it is a sharp change from the Clinton administration, which in its final days declared mercury a hazardous air pollutant subject to strict regulation. And those regulations were supposed to go into effect by the end of this year. As soon as George Bush came into office, these guys came out of the woodwork, started throwing money at him. Lobbyists started showing up, and things changed. Now, Mr. Mercury, his actual name is Lee Zugin, Z-U-G-I-N, known as Mr. Mercury for his depth of knowledge, made a pitch for the industry's preferred approach. This is a system where instead of actually cleaning up the mercury, the power plants that produce a lot of it have to buy credits from power plants that produce very little of it. In other words, if you have a power plant that, for example, doesn't burn coal, and so does, say it burns natural gas, so it produces virtually no mercury, you get credits. You get, you know, say $1 million for the credits. Another power plant burns coal and they're producing a lot of mercury, they are going to have to pay, they need $1 million in credits. They can buy the credits from the first power company. So basically what it is the mercury doesn't get cleaned up, and the corporations get to make tax-deductible transfers of cash. Everybody wins, except for us human beings. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This is mind-boggling, isn't it? Absolutely mind-boggling. The article goes on and on. In fact, they crafted the Clear Skies legislation. Political appointees. Yes, indeed. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The last hours of ancient sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If there's one rule to this game, everybody's gonna name it. Be cool.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Kill Your Television in our chat room says, quotes Ben Franklin. I wished I had remembered that back when we were ranting about the topic. Those who give up freedom for security deserve neither freedom nor security. And special request from the folks in our chat room, this moment of wisdom from our commander-in-chief.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. It fooled me, can't get fooled again.
Yeah. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. The war on terror goes along. I don't know if you noticed, it might have gotten lost in the general insanity, but the few weeks ago, I think it was, maybe a month or so ago, the Bush administration State Department had put out their annual report on global terrorism, and part of it is like a scorecard, it's like, how many terrorist attacks were there in the world? And they pointed out that the number of terrorist attacks has decreased in the last year around the world. And apparently they don't consider, killing our guys in Iraq terrorist attacks. Or, for that matter, our invasion of Iraq as a terrorist attack. But anyhow, they said, you know, isn't this wonderful? This is proof that we are winning the war on terror. There are fewer terror attacks. There were fewer terror attacks in 2003 than in previous years. Let's give George Bush credit where credit's due. I mean, you know, this was the whole, and they had, you know, there were spokesmen on TV shows, and they were, you know, and all the right-wing talk shows, of course, were ranting about it. Well, the Los Angeles Times reports today, the State Department is scrambling to revise its annual report on global terrorism to acknowledge that it understated the number of deadly attacks in 2003. The document was criticized as inaccurate and politically manipulated by the Bush administration when the report was released in April. Quote, senior Bush administration officials immediately hailed it as objective proof that they were winning the war on terrorism. End quote. Now State Department officials acknowledge, quote, they underreported the number of terrorist attacks in the tally for 2003. End quote. The revised figures, notes David Sirota and friends at the Center for American Progress, the revised figures are expected to reveal that in 2003, terrorist attacks rose to, quote, the highest level in 20 years, end quote. Well, you know, there's this old theory that if you kick over the beehive, you're going to get stung. And our attack of Iraq, when they represented no threat to us, they had not participated in any attack on us. They do, of course, have 10% of the world's oil reserves, even more than Saudi Arabia, second only to Saudi Arabia, very significant reserves, as Dick Cheney likes to say, was a major kicking over of the beehive. And now we are amazed. Well, the Bush administration's amazed. I mean, everybody who said, please don't go into Iraq, as Mubarak, President Mubarak of Egypt, he said, you go into Iraq, you're going to create 100 Osama bin Ladens and a million followers. And the Bush administration has now done that. And they're looking around the world going, gee, how did this happen? Isn't this strange? Hadn't expected this. Absolutely amazing, eh? Exposing the con and conservative, Tom Hartman here with you, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Construction was to begin yesterday at Boston's Fleet Center in preparation for the Democratic National Convention coming to town next month, but picketing policemen have stymied the work. When construction workers showed up to the sports arena to begin the multi-million dollar job of turning it into a convention hall, the vast majority refused to cross the lines. The city's police, firefighters, and EMTs are just some of the 40% of the city's union workforce that's currently working without a contract. Talks between the city and police broke off Monday.
Tuesday was a big day for New York City's municipal unions. Blocking traffic and stretching several blocks down Broadway, 75,000 people rallied in support of the police, firefighters, and teachers' unions. Josephine Martinez Darrow, who worked in the New York City School District for over 30 years, spoke in front of City Hall.
I can sincerely tell you this has been the worst year as far as doing my job. I work as a full-time mentor, and hopefully we will be able to get a contract so things will be uplifted again, and we will no longer have to go through the disrespect that we've been going through for many years already.
Participants said they want union contracts that include living wage pay increases, but Mayor Bloomberg says New York City can't afford more than a 3% raise. Members of the United Federation of Teachers have been without a contract since last year. Unionists in the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association and the Uniformed Firefighters Association have been working without a contract for almost 2 years.
Workers at the Grupo M Levi's jeans factory in Haiti's Free Trade Zone went on strike Monday to protest harsh union-busting efforts, which are supposedly prohibited by the factory's major investor, the World Bank. Various campaigns of intimidation and abuse have been unleashed upon the workers there by management, who refuse to recognize a union which has majority support. In the last 2 weeks, workers report being strip-searched and beaten by members of the armed forces of the neighboring Dominican Republic. Some 36 workers have also been fired for union activity.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to new data released by the Census Bureau, school districts' debt rose by 12%, reaching $226 billion in the 2001-2002 school year. Major causes of debt include new school construction, a worsening U.S. economy, and stricter education guidelines. The data doesn't include Bush's No Child Left Behind program, which without increased federal funding is expected to sink districts even deeper into debt.
You've been listening to WIMS, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Don't worry, Tom, Kevin, we won't tell anybody. It is so cool having a live chat room interactive when we're on the air. The actual quote, Franklin said, where did it go? Those who would give up essential freedoms in order to obtain temporary security deserve neither freedom nor security. Ben Franklin. A letter to Josiah Quincy, September 11, 1773. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's okay, here we go. The Anderson Accenture. Pardon my chuckling. I'm sorry. Sometimes this goes over the top. Accenture Corporation is the new name of what used to be called Anderson Consulting. You will recall Anderson Consulting changed their name because they were the bookkeepers that helped Enron pull an Enron, not to mention a few other companies, and they were so tarred with that brush, as it were, that nobody wanted to hire them anymore. So they changed their name to Accenture, and they took their own advice, the advice that they had given Enron. They had told Enron, Enron set up over 900 corporate shells, the majority of them in Bermuda, so they wouldn't have to pay any U.S. taxes. And they had a few U.S. corporations. They'd moved the profitable divisions into the Bermuda corporations where they paid no taxes. They'd move the unprofitable ones into the American corporations where they'd show a loss. And during the 3 years that led up to Enron's collapse, Enron each year actually received a tax refund. Not only did they not pay any taxes, they actually got back hundreds of millions of dollars in cash from you and me by doing this. And so Anderson Consulting, essentially morphed or went down the tubes or whatever for, helping Enron do their Enron. And they reinvented themselves as Accenture. And they incorporated themselves in not New Jersey, no, not Delaware, no, not New York, no, not New Mexico, not Vermont, not Arizona, not New York. No, they incorporated themselves in Bermuda. Now, you may remember Rosa DeLauro, who is a congressman from Connecticut, had put a rider 2 years ago. There was this bill that created the Department of Homeland Security, and she had put this rider on the bill. It's like, you know, you can slap stuff onto legislation. In fact, they do it all the time. Usually what they're slapping on is, you know, a little bit of pork here and there. And she had slapped on this piece of this law onto the legislation that created the Department of Homeland Security that basically said that any government contracting that is done has to go to a company. Now, this was, of course, after the Enron Arthur Anderson scams were revealed. Any money that comes in that goes to one of these companies, you know, that goes to any company, has to go to a company that's incorporated in the United States of America, so it pays taxes. I mean, if we're going to use federal tax dollars that are collected from you and me, and keep in mind, you know, in the 1950s, corporations were paying about half our taxes, and citizens were paying the other half, which broadly reflects, by the way, the use of the commons. Depends on how you parse out the military. You could say, well, the military defends America so that corporations can do business. Or you could say the military defends America so that you and I have freedom. But if you take everything else, you know, the public roads, the education system that provides an educated workforce for corporations, corporate use of police, fire, water, sewer, you know, all, the public transportation, all that kind of stuff. Many folks suggest it really works out to about 50-50. There are those kind of anti-corporate extremists like that nasty Ralph Nader guy. You realize I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. Who suggest that corporations are actually consuming 70-80% of our commons and can document that by pointing out how badly they're polluting our water supplies and our air supplies, for example. But let's go with 50-50 because that's the percentage the corporations were paying in taxes back in the 1950s. Last year, when Bush came into office, corporations were paying around 17% of taxes. Last year, they paid 7% of our taxes. You and I are paying the rest. Okay. So, Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut slaps on this rider to the legislation creating the Homeland Security Department that says, if a corporation wants to get some of those tax dollars that you and I are paying, from various, you know, various and sundry taxes. Keep in mind, I mean, the largest tax increase in history was Ronald Reagan's third year in office. But anyhow, we won't go there. That's a whole another rant. But in any case, at least he knew when to correct a mistake, sort of. She said, you know, if you're going to take tax dollars, you've got to be an American corporation and pay your taxes in the United States. And during the vote on this bill, all of a sudden, all kinds of Republicans just kind of deserted. They are not voting. They were not going to create the Homeland Security Department. And the Republican leadership realized it was her rider. And so they went in, Tom DeLay and Bill Frist, the hospital bloodsucker, and Tom DeLay, the former bug killer inhaler, former exterminator, went in and removed her rider. And so then the Department of Homeland Security got successfully created. Well, she's at it again. She's at it again because last week the Homeland Security Administration Department, I guess it's called, awarded $10 billion to Accenture, the former Arthur Anderson Corporation, the former auditors of Enron, a Bermuda corporation. No, you're not going to see any of those tax dollars. Sorry. According to Congress Daily, Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, plans to force a vote today on her legislation to prohibit the Department of Homeland Security from awarding contracts to companies that incorporate in tax havens. Good luck with this bunch of Republican corporate whores in office, and I probably shouldn't use such a phrase because it insults women who make a living taking money for sex. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. But we'll see. Who knows? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you would like to weigh in on the issues of the day, Chuck in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind?
Hey, listen, I just wanted to, I know that you're scrupulously focused on precision. So I used to do some subcontracting for Anderson Consulting.
Oh, really?
Okay. And, yeah, and here's the story. Anderson Consulting was a part of Anderson Worldwide, which also held Arthur Anderson, which was the audit firm.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson Consulting split away from Arthur Anderson for a variety of business reasons. And Anderson Consulting had to give up the name Anderson. So they became Accenture. It was the other group that was Arthur Anderson that was the audit firm. And they had actually been separated for about 6 years.
Oh, interesting. Well, thank you for correcting me.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, love your program. Just thought you're a detail guy.
Yeah, well, let's, you know, and you know, I'm trying, as much as folks in talk radio say, it's just entertainment, I really do like to be accurate.
it ain't so, just entertainment, Tom. We listen to you, and this is what chooses our votes.
Yeah, and you know, therefore I have even a greater obligation. So let me just get this straight.
You have a huge obligation.
Anderson Consulting had nothing to do with Enron?
No. Yeah, Anderson Consulting, which is now Accenture,
right,
had nothing to do with Enron.
Okay.
Arthur Anderson, the audit firm, had everything to do with Enron.
And they're toast now.
And yeah, that's why Arthur Anderson is toast. The judge that adjudicated the split between the thing,
right,
that's why he made them change the name to Accenture from Anderson Consulting. The two companies were totally split as of several years ago, way prior to anything having to do with audit. Accenture was 100% a consulting firm, mostly for IT and process. They never did audit.
Okay, good. Chuck, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the correction, and I'm glad that that our listeners heard it in the same moment that I had passed out my somewhat incorrect rant. Although the other parts of it, Chuck, that they
absolutely
are they're headquartered in Bermuda. They got $10 billion. We're never going to see a dime of it in taxes. That's all true.
You're absolutely right, Tom. I just wanted that one tiny point so that people didn't take your whole argument apart predicated on that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay, thanks a lot, Chuck. I appreciate it.
I know.
16 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tim in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I just picked up the Edison Gene, your book, and about a quarter of the way through it. And my thoughts are on this whole thing is, what genetics are involved with the cons that are in power right now?
And lizard genes! They're actually, have you read the chapter yet about the lizard people?
No, I don't think I did.
Okay, you'll get to it. It's about two-thirds of the way through the book.
Okay,
actually, yeah.
But I'm reading through this, and I'm going, there must be some common thread through all these people that are just driving things insane.
There actually is. And I don't talk about it in that book, because it's a book, the book that you're talking about, The Edison Gene, is a book about attention deficit disorder.
Right.
But there has been good research done on this. It was published about a year and a half ago, and the university or the organization that published it just really got reamed by the right wingers for this thing. But, you know, or the journal, I forget where it was published, but it was in one of, you know, some good standard psychology thing. And
well, I guess my other point is, you know, maybe I'd love to hear your talk on it.
Yeah.
But the other thing is how do we get these guys out, and how do we go and find the ones that have moral backbone to get them into office? Because there must be a genetic pool out there someplace that they're living and hiding.
Yeah. Well, let me answer both questions for you, Tim, and maybe this will make sense. And what you'll learn as you read The Edison Gene, I mean, actually the key to it is in that book. There is a chapter in there on developmental neurophysiology, that is how our brains and nervous systems develop from basically conception to the age of 21 when the frontal lobes finish developing. And when the baby, and this starts most critically while the baby is in the womb. While the baby is in the womb, during those 9 months of gestation, the baby, or the fetus, or whatever you want to call it, is continuously interrogating the mother. Is this a safe world that I'm going to be born into, or is it a dangerous world? And if the message that the baby gets back is, it's a safe world, then the frontal lobes, the part that is uniquely human, a couple of the higher apes have small, partially developed frontal lobes. So basically, frontal lobes are the thing that makes us human, that makes us unique from other primates. And most folks would say that allows us to engage in higher cognitive processes. The frontal lobes become larger, and the limbic brain, or not the limbic brain, the reptilian brain, the brain stem, the part that is responsible for fight and flight response, mm-hmm. for adrenaline, for anger, for rage, for violence, for physicalness, that part gets smaller. Now, on the other hand, if as the fetus is developing, the message that it gets from the mother is, this is a dangerous world you're about to be born into, then the frontal lobe development gets stunted. And the R brain, the reptile brain, the smaller, the brainstem part of the brain, the ancient brain, the part of the brain, I mean, literally an alligator only has this as its brain, right? This is 100% of the brain of an alligator. And see, our brain is really three parts. There's the alligator brain, and then over that is the mammalian brain. It's called the limbic brain, which has actually full emotional capability. A dog can experience the same range of emotions as we can. They have the same kind of brain for that. And then over that is the cortex and the new cortex and the frontal lobes that brings us into primate and human. So there's these three brains, and the thinking occurs in the third one. Anyhow, if the message that the child gets back from the mother is it's a dangerous world, then you get big hindbrain, small forebrain. If the message that the child gets back from the mother is it's a safe world, then you get big forebrain, small hindbrain. You with me so far, Tim?
I am.
Okay. The mechanism that the mother uses to convey this to the baby is a chemical called cortisol, which the body produces when it's under stress. So if the mother is experiencing high levels of stress during the pregnancy, then she's communicating to the child, it's a dangerous world you're being born into, and she's more likely to give birth to a baby that has somewhat smaller forebrain and somewhat larger hindbrain. And depending on the amount of cortisol, it can be a big difference or it can be a very small difference. This continues from the time of birth then all the way up until the age of 21, when people think brain maturation finishes in the teenage years. It actually doesn't. The frontal lobes don't actually begin their final stage of development until people are around 14 years old, and they complete around 21. So up until the age of 21, the brain is still continuously monitoring the environment, using cortisol as its measurement. And if there's stress, so where do the conservatives come from? Conservatives who are driven primarily by fear. They're people who are, in those first 21 years of life, experienced too much stress. And so their reptile brain is hyperreactive. They're living always on the edge of fear. And you see it in their behavior. You see it in their politics. And whereas those people who didn't experience all that amount of stress, they have higher cognitive function. They can actually think things through more carefully. So there's your answer, Tim. As to where do we find the politicians of the final category to get them into office, I think, that's us. We just need to get more active and we need to get more involved. Tim, thanks for the call. Got to boogie along here. Okay, you're welcome. Ten minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman.
Frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Shifting to renewable energy could create more than a million high-paying jobs. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. 13 separate studies have recently looked at the potential impact of renewable energy development on the U.S. economy. They vary in their methods and focus, but all agree on one thing. Solar, wind, biomass, and other renewable technologies could create a lot of new jobs. Daniel Kamen is an energy expert at the University of California at Berkeley. He recently evaluated those 13 studies.
The low-end estimates are that there would be maybe 500,000 new jobs by doing this. And the high-end estimates are a couple million new jobs.
Kamen's own assessment falls right in the middle. 1.2 million new jobs if we meet 20% of our future energy needs with renewable energy and efficiency programs.
And that's job growth above and beyond what you would get if you simply met that new 20% of energy mix from more fossil fuels. So this really is talking about job growth, not just sort of job substitution or replacement.
And they'd be good jobs, according to Kamen.
These are high-tech manufacturing-type jobs. These are what most economists consider to be high-quality jobs, both in terms of wages and in terms of career paths, and also jobs that are really productive for the economy.
Kamen says most of those jobs could not be outsourced to other countries, and he says a boost in biomass fuels would strengthen the American farm economy. But Kamen says this won't happen by itself. He says we need a major revision of national energy policy to provide rewards and incentives for renewable energy and efficiency. And he says we're missing an opportunity to cut our dependence on foreign oil and put a lot of people back to work. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
There's a million sad stories on the side of the road. Strange how we all just got used to the blood.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. We've only got about 3 minutes left in the program. We've got two calls here. Gary in St. Joseph, Missouri first. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Oh, a long time I haven't been listening to you, but I'm back in the groove again. I just want to make a quick comment about
all of these tax havens and all these rich people and just soaking the government overseas. But I seem to remember Gore Vidal said it. He said the economy in the U.S. is free enterprise for the poor and welfare for the rich. And now we're seeing it come back to us in spades.
Yeah, amen.
Not all I had to say. You can go on to the next guy.
Okay, Gary, and yes, socialism for the rich. Hey, Billy in Santa Fe is on the line. What's up, Billy?
Hi there.
Great. Hi.
Tom, so a few thoughts on the Reagan death and the way we honor presidents.
Okay.
First of all, geez, maybe there should be a waiting period before we honor anybody. That's number one, like 5 years after their death. Number two, no politician should be honored that doesn't get honored when the other side has control. In other words, they have to wait for a Democratic Congress if they want to vote Reagan something, as opposed to just pushing because they have the majority.
I don't know. I think, Billy, if Jerry Ford died tomorrow, I mean, you wouldn't see this kind of thing. The fact of the matter is, ooh, how to communicate. And, from as bizarre as his family life may have been, and apparently it was fairly bizarre, there were parts of his personality that were very charming, and they projected. He was able to project.
That's right. Part of Reagan was really wonderful, and part of Reagan was really bad.
Yeah.
And that's the facts of the thing.
Oh, sure.
One more thing. If we really want to honor him, what we really ought to do is get rid of this crazy stem cell ban, just like Mrs. Reagan wants us to. That would be a real-world help to millions of people. But you know what really I think we should do? And that is stop naming things after politicians. They do it themselves. They think they're important, so they name somebody else, hoping they'll get a highway. We should name them after artists and talk show hosts.
Wait a minute. You want to have the Rush Limbaugh Memorial Airport in Washington, D.C.?
I'm real tired of politicians naming everything after themselves. I'll take any change at all.
Okay, I understand. Thanks a lot, Billy.
Thanks, buddy.
Good to hear from you. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Adam Cohen for helping engineer it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us on radiopower.org. Thanks to our sponsors, especially Small Dog Electronics. Please patronize and a sponsor with us for some time now. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for writing and performing our theme music. And thanks to you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Ball said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.